Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gura Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupaham Sagrajataham Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitaham Savadutaham Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padaham Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha E Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhana Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Anchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Yadveta Gadadara Srivasadi Shigaura Bhakta Vrinda Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. On the board it says, yes, 27. Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, 20 chapter, verse number 7. Please repeat after me. Purve Ami Tomara Kariachi Upakara Tumi Ama Chadi Kara Pratyupakara Purve Ami Tomar Karicha Upakara Tumi Ame Chadi Kara Pratyupakara Purve ami tomara kariyachi upakara, tumi ami chadikara pratyupakara. Purve ami tomara kariyachi upakara, tumi ama chadikara pratyupakara. Purve, formerly, Ami, I, Tomara, your, Kariachi, have done, Upakara, welfare, Tumi, you, Ama, me, Chadi, releasing, Kara, do, Prati Upakara, return welfare. Translation by His Divine Grace Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Sanatana Goswami continued, Previously I have done much for you, now I am in difficulty. Please return my goodwill by releasing me. So, Sanatana, there is no purport to this verse. Sanatana Goswami is talking to the jailkeeper. Now, I've seen that from verse 7 to 57, there is no purport. So what are we going to do? We're just read the English. Yes. Because actually the verse 57 is a very nice verse. It's actually the conclusion of this whole meeting between Sanatana Goswami and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So I will just read the verses then. Yeah. Here are 5,000 gold coins. Please accept them. By releasing me, you will receive the results of pious activities and gain material profit as well. Thus you will profit in two ways simultaneously. In this way, Sanatana Goswami convinced the jailkeeper, who replied, "Please hear me, my dear sir. I am willing to release you, but I am afraid of the government." Sanatana replied, "There is no danger. The Nawab has gone to the south. If he returns, tell him that Sanatana went to pass Tool near the bank of the Ganges, and that as soon as he saw the Ganges, he jumped in. Tell him, I looked for him a long time, but I could not find any trace of him. He jumped in with his shackles, and therefore he was drowned and washed away by the waves. There is no reason for you to be afraid, for I shall not remain in this country. I shall become a mendicant and go to the holy city of Mecca." Sanatana Goswami could see that the mind of the meat-eater was still not satisfied. He then stacked 7,000 gold coins before him. When the meat-eater saw the coins, he was attracted to them, but then agreed, and that night he cut Sanatana's shackles and let him cross the Ganges. In this way, Sanatana Goswami was released. However, he was not able to walk along the path of the fortress. Walking day and night, he finally arrived at the hilly tract of land known as Patada. After reaching Patada, he met a landholder and submissively requested him to get him across that hilly tract of land. A man who was expert in palmistry was at that time staying with the landlord. Knowing about Sanatana, he whispered the following in the landlord's ear. The palmists say, "This man Sanatana possesses 8 gold coins." Hearing this, the landlord was very pleased and spoke the following to Sanatana Goswami. The landlord said, I shall get you across that hilly tract of night with my own men. Now just cook for yourself and take your lunch." Saying this, the landlord offered Sanatana grain to cook. Sanatana then went to the riverside and took his bath. Because Sanatana had been fasting for 2 days, he cooked the food and ate it. However, having formerly been a minister of the Nawab, he began to contemplate the situation. As a former minister for the Nawab, Sanatana could certainly understand diplomacy. He therefore thought, "Why is his landlord offering me such respect?" Thinking in this way, he questioned his servant, whose name was Ishana. Sanatana asked his servant, "Ishana, I think you have some valuable things with you." Ishana replied, "Yes, I have 7 gold coins." Hearing this, Sanatana is actually very intelligent to come to this conclusion, but of course Krishna is telling him. Hearing this, Sanatana Goswami chastised his servant, saying, "Why have you brought this dead Nell with you?" Thereupon, Sanatana Goswami took the 7 gold coins in his hand and went to the landlord, holding the gold coins before him. He spoke as follows, "I have these 7 gold coins with me. Please accept them, and from a religious point of view, please get me across that hilly tract of land. I am a prisoner of the government, and I cannot go along the way of the ramparts. It will be very poisonous of you to take this money and kindly, sorry, it will be very pious of you to take this money and kindly get me across this hilly tract of land." Smiling, the Lord said, "Before you offered them, I already knew that there were 8 gold coins in your servant's possession. On this very night, I would have killed you and taken your coins. It is very good that you have voluntarily offered them to me. I am now relieved from such a sinful activity. I am very satisfied with your behavior. I shall not accept these gold coins, but I shall get you across that hilly tract of land simply to perform a pious activity." Sanatana Goswami replied, "If you do not accept these coins, someone else will kill me for them. It is better that you save me from the danger by accepting the coins." After this settlement was made, the landlord gave Sanatana Goswami 4 watchmen to accompany him. They went through the forest path for the whole night and thus brought him over the hilly tract of land. After crossing the hills, Sanatana Goswami told his servant Ishana, "I think you still have some balance left from the gold coins." Ishana replied, "I still have 1 gold coin in my possession." Sanatana Goswami then said, "Take the coin and return to your home." After departing from Ishana, Sanatana Goswami began traveling alone with a water pot in his hand, simply covered with a torn kilt. He thus lost all his anxiety. Walking, Sanatana Goswami finally arrived at a place called Hajipura. That evening he sat down within a garden. In Hajipura, there was a gentleman named Shrikanta, who happened to be the husband of Sanatana Goswami's sister. He was engaged there in government service. Shrikanta had 300,000 gold coins with him, which had been given to him by the emperor for the purchase of horses. Thus, Shrikanta was buying horses and dispatching them to the emperor. When Shrikanta was sitting in an elevated place, he could see Sanatana Goswami. That night, he took a servant and went to see Sanatana Goswami. When they met, they had many conversations. Sanatana Goswami told him in detail about his arrest and release. Shrikanta then told Sanatana Goswami, "Stay here for at least 2 days and dress up like a gentleman. Abandon these dirty garments." Sanatana Goswami replied, "I shall not stay here even for a moment. Please help me cross the Ganges. I shall leave immediately." With great care, Shrikanta gave him a woolen blanket and helped him across the Ganges. Thus, Sanatana Goswami departed again. Actually, there is also much to be said about all these verses, but since we have so many verses to read, we'll just continue and then at the end just summarize it. After a few days, Sanatana Goswami arrived at Varanasi. He was very pleased to hear about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's arrival there. Sanatana Goswami then went to the house of Chandrasekhar and sat down by the door. Understanding what was happening, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke to Chandrasekhara. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "There is a devotee at your door. Please call him in." Going outside, Chandrasekhara could not see a Vaishnava at his door. When Chandrasekhara informed the Lord that no Vaishnava was at his door, the Lord asked him, "Is there anyone at all at your door?" Chandrasekhara replied, "There is a Muslim mendicant." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately said, "Please bring him here." Chandrasekhara then spoke to Sanatana Goswami, who was still sitting beside the door. "O Muslim mendicant, please come in. The Lord is calling you." Sanatana Goswami was very pleased to hear this order, and he then entered Chandrasekhara's house. As soon as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw Sanatana Goswami in the courtyard, he immediately went up to him with great haste. After embracing him, the Lord was overwhelmed with ecstatic love. As soon as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu touched Sanatana Goswami, Sanatana was also overwhelmed with ecstatic love. In a faltering voice, he said, "O my Lord, do not touch me." Shoulder to shoulder, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami began to cry unlimitedly. Chandrasekhara was very much astonished to see this. Catching his hand, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took Sanatana Goswami inside and made him sit on an elevated place next to him. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began cleansing Sanatana Goswami's body with his own transcendental hand, Sanatana Goswami said, "O my Lord, please do not touch me." The Lord replied, "I am touching you just to purify myself, because by the force of your devotional service, you can purify the whole universe." And then we get to verse 57. So Sanatana Goswami is just trying to get away from the prison. And he's doing that very expertly. Although he's a pure devotee in transcendental consciousness, he's still not losing his common sense. And with his dealing with the jailkeeper and with the landlord there, he acts very expertly. So he's not a stranger to this world. Although he's on the highest level of devotional service, still Krishna is constantly giving him intelligence. Krishna is saying, "Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadhami buddhi yogam tam." So somebody who is surrendered unto me, I constantly give him intelligence by which he can come to me. So these devotees, they have an intimate relationship with Krishna. At the end of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says that the most conclusive and ultimate instruction of Bhagavad Gita is that a devotee should develop at first and in a later phase be established in a loving relationship with the Paramatma in the heart and take constant guidance from Paramatma in the heart. So, because Krishna is there, Krishna is in Goloka Vrindavan also, but Krishna is in our heart, and that same Krishna is there, and he's there for us. So it's a very practical, powerful meditation for sadhaka bhakta to contemplate upon and to develop this relationship with Krishna who is in the heart. And if we very sincerely, honestly do this, free from material desire, "I'm yours, Krishna, I don't know what you want me to do, where you want me to do it, how you want me to do it, I just depend upon you. I only know I want to serve you." So this implies that Krishna's desires for us have preference over our own, and that we are practically willing to accept these instructions. These are very practical instructions of Krishna, ultimately manifested through the spiritual master. Krishna will also test us, of course, if we are really not willing to follow these instructions. Krishna is not going to give us that instruction, because if he gives us the instruction and we don't follow it, then we get more reactions by not following it, and it's better we just stay in our previous conditioned situation, to just very gradually get purified, to come to a point where we say, yes, that's it, I'm done with this material world, I'm disgusted with this material world. That's what Prabhupada says. Ultimately, one has to become completely disgusted with this material world, with all material desires and all propositions of happiness and anything in it. And coming to that point, then actually the heart is becoming a ready field for that seed of devotion to be planted in. So we're going to discuss that a little further, because the meeting of Sanatana Goswami and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it means many things. And Mahaprabhu is in Radha Bhav, and Sanatana Goswami is his intimate associate, so we cannot understand what it means to them, but they are also acharyas, so they also teach on behalf of us. So we're going to see a little bit what this meeting of Sanatana Goswami and Mahaprabhu means to us and for the practical development of our spiritual life. So verse 57, Bhavatvida Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhuta Svayam Prabho Tirthi Kurvanti Tirthani Svantastena Gadabrita. That's a very famous one. Prabhupada quoted this verse very much. Saints of your caliber are themselves places of pilgrimage. Because of their purity, they are constant companions of the Lord, and therefore they can purify even the places of pilgrimage. Purport. This verse was spoken by Maharaj Yudhishthira to Vidura in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.13.10. Vidura was returning home after visiting sacred places of pilgrimage, and Maharaj Yudhishthira was receiving his saintly uncle. In essence, Maharaj Yudhishthira was saying, "My dear Lord Vidura, you yourself are a holy place because you are an advanced devotee. People like you always carry Lord Vishnu in their hearts. You can revitalize all holy places after they have been polluted by the pilgrimage of sinners. A sinful person goes to a holy place of pilgrimage to be purified in a holy place. There are many saintly people and temples of Lord Vishnu. However, the holy places become infected with the sins of many visitors. When an advanced devotee goes to a holy place, he counteracts all the sins of the pilgrims. Therefore, Maharaj Yudhishthira addressed Vidura in this way. Since an advanced devotee carries Lord Vishnu within his heart, he is a moving temple and a moving Vishnu. An advanced devotee does not need to go to holy places, for wherever he stays is a holy place. In this connection, Narottam Das Thakur Tirtha Yatra Parishrama Kevala Manera Brahma, visiting holy places is simply another type of bewilderment. Since an advanced devotee does not need to go to a holy place, why does he go? The answer is that he simply goes to purify the place. So saints of your caliber are themselves places of pilgrimage. Because of their purity, they are constant companions of the Lord, and therefore they can purify even the places of pilgrimage. So, there are two considerations, tattva vichar, apar vichar. So tattva vichar is the absolute considerations on which our acharyas always stress. The other consideration, the relative consideration, is also there. And sometimes, because we are not completely surrendered to Krishna and not perfectly situated in surrender to Krishna, we very happily accept relative considerations of meaning to these verses, on which emphasis is given to pilgrimage to holy places and things like that. And that's important. We get Sukriti, we get Punya, but just thinking for a few minutes and considering our miserable position here in this material world, Krishna from within, from without, is always inspiring us to really push ourselves to the limit and really set standards for ourselves of tattva-vichara, of this absolute consideration. And hearing these truths are actually very confronting and very, very humbling. Here, Prabhupada speaks about a pure devotee, somebody who is completely surrendered to Krishna. So, Prabhupada says that such a person has Krishna in his heart. Even Prabhupada goes further. He is saying, he is a moving temple and a moving Vishnu. It is saying that sadhu guru, sadguru, pure devotee guru, and a pure devotee in general is a manifestation of the Paramatma, actually. It's not the same person, but he is a manifestation of Paramatma in sense that Krishna is actually completely taking over all his activities. Everything he thinks, he speaks, he does is completely under this Svarup Shakti from Krishna. So this consciousness, and especially the words emanating from such a devotee's mouth, is extremely purifying. And here a scene is set to such a meeting between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami, who meet each other. And as an example to us, because the whole Shastra, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, is centered around the point of sadhu sangha, really, of association with such extremely elevated devotees. Why? Because they carry Krishna in our heart. So when we analyze the process of devotional service, we start with Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. The first thing is Shravanam, not Kirtanam. Why Shravanam? Did you ever think about that? Because we are in a conditioned state of mind. Our soul is covered by heavy layers of Tama Rajagun. And okay, I chant Hare Krishna, which is nice, which is pious. I may get some Sukriti, but I'm chanting that with a contaminated tongue, a contaminated mind. So I cannot generate Shudanam. I cannot generate Krishna. Only Shudanam is non-different from Krishna. And pure devotional service is direct transcendental association with Krishna. So Nama Parat, Nama Bas will not do. I cannot generate that sound. I can try as much as I like. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, on your own effort, you can chant Nama Bas if you're a very strict sadhaka and jnani, but you can never chant Shudanam. And without chanting Shudanam, you cannot get Krishna. So how are we going to get to Shudanam? It is by sadhu sangha. And how particularly by sadhu sangha? By hearing. Because Shravanam is the first aspect of devotional service. So by hearing pure katha from such a person, and having our consciousness purified in this way, ultimately we may receive this bhakti lata bija, this seed of devotion. It doesn't go immediately. It may go immediately if you are very qualified, like Sanatana Goswami meets Mahaprabhu, and they touch each other, and they just start crying unlimitedly. I mean, what they experience, we don't know. So that is like a pure contact, loving reciprocation, mercy, unconditional mercy given by Mahaprabhu, pure devotional service rendered by Sanatana Goswami to Mahaprabhu. But when we may meet such a person, we may not get the same experience, and the test is right there, Radha Gopinath standing there. But are we also getting that reciprocation? Because still a conditioned mind is there. So these layers have to be purified. By what? By Shravanam, by hearing. So in this way, it says that Krishna expands as Balaram Prabhu, who is Nityananda Prabhu, who is Adi Guru. So he first, and Balaram has a plow in his hand. Krishna a flute, Balaram a plow. Plow to cultivate the heart, to take out the stones and the roots. By hearing, by continuous hearing. The verse is slipping me, but it's there in Bhagavatam. Just by continuously, maybe somebody knows, Harikata, the heart gets purified. So in this way, you know, we are creating an opportunity to receive the mercy of Krishna. So then one day, if we are very fortunate, then some of that pure Harikata, it may just pierce through the deconditioning of the mind and enter into the heart. And then that Adau Shraddha, which is the beginning of devotional service, is implanted in the heart. And that also we have to consider from an absolute perspective, because if we say faith in an Adau Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Dhananartha Nivriti. So first Adho Shraddha and then Sadhu Sangha. Sometimes we think, okay, I heard it. I heard devotees talking about Krishna. I read it in the scriptures, so I have some Adho Shraddha. It is also Adho Shraddha. But mostly it is Adho Shraddha on a more intellectual or mental platform. It may not be purely conceived. It may not be. But Adho Shraddha should be really implanted in the heart as a transcendental seed. And in nature, because Bhakti Yoga is a transcendental process, and the process starts with Adho Shraddha and ends with Prema Bhakti, Adho Shraddha is in quality the same as Prema Bhakti. It's just the same thing. It is Svarup Shakti. It is not material energy. The only difference between the two is that Prema Bhakti is very, a lot, and very intense. So devotional service starts there, where that seed is received from Krishna, from Guru. And that is a direct contact with Krishna. So that is really a revolution in our spiritual lives. That is really where we practically experience what it means to exist on a transcendental platform, if only for a few moments, because anartha nivritti hasn't happened yet, so still anarthas are there. But the seed is planted. So this is tattva vichar, absolute consideration, and then sadhu sangha. What does sadhu sangha mean? Hearing, chanting, in association of sadhu guru, in association of devotees, and getting instructions from Krishna. Very practical instructions, what Krishna wants us to do. And that way, Sadguru is again the manifestation of the Paramatma. What Krishna is already telling inside, he's telling through Guru. That's also how you know. This is Guru, because he tells what Krishna is telling inside. Already that fate has established a little relation with Krishna. So you have an idea. Acharyas call it the ring of truth. But we're not sure yet what Krishna wants me to do. Then Guru comes, he tells, this is what Krishna wants you to do. You take that instruction as your life and your soul. Not our life anymore. This is Krishna's life, Guru's life. We belong to Guru now, and we just have to, at whatever cost, follow this instruction. By strictly following that instruction, sadhu sangha, that's bhajana kriya. We do our bhajan, follow the instructions, which is mainly hearing, chanting, sadhu sangha, taking prasadam, the basic things Prabhupada gave. Harinam, sankirtan, book distribution, whatever we need to do, then anartha nivritti. In this way, anartha nivritti takes place. Anartha nivritti is not a cheap process, because every anartha is actually an arrangement Krishna has to make. If you're very qualified, he just uproots it like that. If you're not so qualified, he has to, you know, make some more arrangements. Sometimes bring up the stick and other programs like that. But if we ultimately get it and get purified, it's good. So it's always a test. It's always putting full faith in Krishna, in Guru Krishna's instructions. Am I willing to do what they want, or am I just going for my own program? It is very easy, also in an association of devotees, to hide yourself a little bit and go for your own program. You know, go through the motions, but not really being there. You cannot cheat Krishna, he knows. So that's a challenge to each and every devotee at each and every stage, that, you know, because ultimately there are such fine anarthas in the hearts. Ultimately Krishna will have to make some arrangement for them also if we want them. Because if anartha nivritti not complete, there is no nishta, and no nishta not fixed in devotional service. If one is not fixed in devotional service, ultimately loving sentiments which come later, they simply don't happen, you know. So we have to be very realistic also, like these bhavas and everything. It just comes after nishta. Nishta is completely fixed. No material desire, relationship with Krishna in the heart, knowing what one should do, in what consciousness, in what mood, you know. It's practically realized, the mood of dependence and how to deal with anarthas. And then from that point onward, you know, these finer sentiments of bhakti, they will manifest. So this meeting of Mahaprabhu and Sanatana Goswami is a little bit the setting of how they want to explain to us this process of devotional service. It's the beginning. It's sadhu sangha, how this faith is installed in the heart. And then after this, it's going to be very interesting. Mahaprabhu is going to explain these signs of pure devotional service to Sanatana Goswami. He's basically going to cover everything. He's just going to, I mean, there are no anarthas anymore, so he's just going to pour it in. Of course, Sanatana Goswami is already Siddha, but still, they, you know, to be merciful to us, they're doing it again, you know, to teach us as acharyas, to make us understand what that process means. And that is also the meaning of these scriptures, to really go into the deeper meaning of what these things understand and practice these things in our lives. Actually, we should set very, very high standards for ourselves, because what we tend to do is that we read these things and out of a sense of insecurity we say, okay, yes, that's happening to me, I'm doing that. But that's a bit of an easy way out. That's not really meant to be like that. So we should always have a common sense that this teaching of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Bhagavatam is completely spoken and realized on a transcendental platform. And that the meaning of these verses and Prabhupada's words is just unlimited. And always having this healthy and common sense of humility, because this is humility. And realizing where we stand in regards to this process. And that's a very healthy basis for discussing these things and practicing pure devotional service. It only talks about pure devotional service. You can open the Bhagavatam at any page, or Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita at any page, it only talks about pure devotional service. Everything else is really completely rejected. Even if it seems that acharyas are giving instructions according to the varna and ashrams of particular aspiring devotees, then still that is in the light of pure devotional service. Everything is based upon following Guru's instructions and doing whatever he says in a mood of developing pure devotional service and attaining Krishna's lotus feet. Somebody wants to add something? Nataji? Become a pure devotee yourself and then you can plant seeds. Until now, just try to be sincere and serious. See, it doesn't mean, I mean, also Adau Shraddha is explained in that it can be received in different degrees. You know, as soon as a touch of Krishna is there, some transcendental touch is there, and that is simply based upon sincerity. Doesn't matter what our background is, however much conditioned we are. If you really are sincere, then Krishna will reciprocate with you, and you will know that within your heart through the deity, and that experience you already had. So if you simply try to, because it's not always there, that consciousness, simply try to, in our daily services, try to aspire for that consciousness, you know, with the same sincerity and the same dependence. That's why Prabhu yesterday spoke about constantly chanting, lamenting. This is the meaning of lamenting. You had such a nice experience, it's not there anymore. So now you have to lament. Acharya say you have to cry and cry and cry and cry and not stop crying until you get Krishna. So that is this lamenting. So if we don't have Krishna, or we're not in the best consciousness we can be in, and we're not lamenting, it means we're not very sincere. It means that our mind is, you know, captured with other things, that we're becoming complacent, or we're thinking we're doing pretty well, now practicing a little bit of devotional service, and major problems of mind and body are gone, so I'm doing quite all right. But that complacency will be a very short time, and if we're at all sincere, Krishna will completely disturb that and we will be messed up again, because that's our qualification. Our qualification is to be just so sincere that Krishna puts enough trouble in our lives and put a stick behind us so we can move on. Because if we're really qualified, we don't need all of that, but I mean, speaking out of my personal experiences, I'm not like that, and but it's different degrees, you know. At a certain point, we have to get it, and once we, the tendency is we have good consciousness, and then we lose it because we become complacent. We're suffering, then we're crying again because it's not nice. We're suffering. We get again good consciousness. We go fall back again. What that really means? It means that we're not so sincere. It means that our material desires from that pure consciousness are still drawing, pulling us back. It means that we have still not made a decision that I want to serve Krishna and not Maya. It's not a 50-50 or a 40-60 or a 25-75% game plan here. It is zero for Maya and 100% for Krishna, because unless that decision is made, it will always keep on happening. That is called unsteady devotional service, not fixed. And what is the basis of that steady devotional service? Adha Ushrada, echt, that revelation of Krishna. About fate then, so when you come to that realization, I want Krishna, not Maya, then Krishna will reveal himself in such a way, you will get such instructions that by following them you will stay forever, eternally, nishta, in that consciousness. So until the point you have realized a bit of, not completely, that Adha Ushrada, in degrees, let's say, it will keep on going. But you have to cry, you have to constantly cry and cry and cry and serve with the intention of getting there again and staying there. That is the idea. That is the test of sincerity. You cannot cry constantly if you do Asat Sangha. If you do a little bit Asat Sangha, the whole thing will be spoiled. It requires very good association. Devotees who also cry, devotees who are also sincere and serious, otherwise it's very difficult. Even though you may try. So you don't have to think about the people who visit Radha Desh, you just have to do your service. And if you do your service, then your words may be empowered a little bit. Because it goes through sound, it doesn't go in any other way. They may see the deities, they may appreciate it, but ultimately, the most mercy they can get if they hear something from a devotee who has realized something. So if you're doing a nice morning program and you're in good consciousness and then you're talking to the people, they may get some benefit. In that way, they may get the most benefit, in fact. Prabhu? Yeah, because it's essence. No, it's always there. It's there at every page. He may not say it's crying, but if you try to understand the mood Srila Prabhupada is explaining in his books, when he talks about humility, he's talking about crying. When he's talking about dependence, he's talking about crying. These are not just letters and words on a page. You know, they're meant to be realized. So it's there everywhere. I mean, acharyas, they all speak the same thing, Krishna, because Krishna is speaking through them. He takes over everything, like we mentioned in the beginning, so he's speaking. And it is simply essence for our position. Even the prema bhaktis, they are crying. It's such a perfect thing Krishna gave us, really. But we, if they are crying, what to speak of us who are in a stage of practice, devotional practice? We should constantly cry. Again, also not on a mental platform. That won't do also. It's not sentimental. And you don't have to have tears in your eyes. But you should be really, you know, a bit disgusted with yourself of, I'm not up to the standard, Krishna. And you should be very grave. And you can't fake this. You cannot create this mood. You cannot. You can try to do it, but that's intellectual assertion. It has nothing to do with bhakti yoga. That's jnani, that's jnana yoga. And in many ways, this anartha, that's one of the anarthas, is also contaminating us. That we're trying to now it's also based upon sincerity. If we're really sincere, Krishna will ultimately teach us that we're using our mind and our intelligence instead of allowing Krishna to give us this mood. But in order to do that, like Draupadi, you have to put your hands up and Krishna, I don't know anymore, but you'll have to handle it. And then he may break down the anarthas and he may give us really a proper perspective on ourselves. Crying for Krishna is not very difficult. If we just understand our position, we are automatically crying because it's really bad. It's not good. We are living in this material world with material desires. Bhagavatam explains they're just like snakes and thieves and robbers trying to kill our soul. So if we truly understand that, then we will cry always, but we don't always understand that because Maya is two potencies, covering and dragging potency. So first she covers us up, we're in good consciousness, she covers us up, and then we start enjoying again, you know, because we're clear, we're intelligent, everything is nice. Krishna is also there, somewhere, but not in the center. And then Krishna is dragging us down again. Maya, sorry. True Krishna. Maya is dragging us down again. And then again, we're in tamagun and suffering, crying. So, when are we going to see? It's very simple thing, really. But when this is happening to us, we're all over the place except realizing this point. In many days, many weeks, many years, We're you know, running, but we're just like tied up and not moving one inch because we just make the same mistakes again. So there has to come a moment when we say, Krishna, no more. It's done. I can't live like this anymore. And then, yeah, be careful also because Krishna may just do a few things which will not be so nice. But okay, he knows how much we can take. Depending upon him, having full faith in him, let him do whatever needs to be done. He's just waiting for us to start crying. I will give you a few, if you want, quotes where Prabhupada speaks about crying. It is there. You have to look for it. Huh? Yeah. Prabhupada, actually Krishna made Prabhupada speak to a very broad public. And everything is there, perfectly, pure, transcendentally. But a prema bhakti will enjoy reading Prabhupada's books, but also somebody who is completely a Maya. He will also get something out of it. And that's what the purposes of Prabhupada's books. So everything is there. At the same time, it's there for everyone. The same things can be said in such philosophical language that the layman will not understand it, but that's not what Prabhupada wants, you know. He wants to for everyone to connect with this pure devotional service. Of course not. Why would he? I mean, that's the difference between mercy and cheating. If what you want is more important to what Krishna wants, Guru and Krishna will also give you an instruction, but that's not mercy, that is cheating. They will give you vanchana. Because you're not willing to do anyway what Krishna wants you to do. So if he would give you the instruction, and you don't do it, the reactions will be far greater, and your situation will be far worse, because now you commit Guru aparat. Before you were just ignorant and you were just lazy and not sincere. So of course there's a price to be paid. It's not a free thing. And Krishna knows that. Krishna knows this, you know, if he will mess it up or not. If you're sincere, if you're really sincere, it's also a question of the ability to receiving it. Not at every stage we can receive it. So there is to be Balaram with the plow. He will prepare the ground. That's there also. If you're sincere, the instructions you get will bring you up to a point where you will be... And then the test is in at that moment self, because then you will say, before I thought I was willing to serve Krishna, but now I realize that at that time I was simply cheating myself. So much desire for honor and gain or this or that was still entangled with my intention. But you didn't realize it. Consciousness was covered, but then in a more purified state of mind you can... then realize what was your consciousness before, and that will just continue until you're there with Krishna. So that's our responsibility. Our constant challenge to get to know what Krishna wants for us. He knows it. And it's simple. Krishna says, if you surrender unto me, then you will get me. So if we in that way surrender, it only takes one lifetime to go back to Krishna. So ask yourself, if I die right now, am I going back to Krishna? Am I in completely pure consciousness? Am I free from material desires? Is my mind not disturbing me anymore? If the answer is yes to that question, then you're a very fortunate person. If no, you still have a lot of work to do. But that's true for all of us. Prabhu. I'm not talking about the mental state. I'm talking about Krishna giving you this realization. Because I can try to think like that. It will not be sustainable. For a few moments you will force yourself to think like that. And the next moment... By autopilot, in a natural way, your mind will again feel pretty good about himself, and I'm such a nice person, and this and that, and blah, blah, blah. The whole story again. Ego in the center. Mind and intelligence completely tuned into the ego. Useful, okay, if you want to go the slow way, all right. But why not just go the fast way? Krishna is there. Go to Krishna and tell him, break me down. Just destroy it. You know? Do what you have to do to make me sober. No, not pathological. Everything which comes from Krishna is... It may become pathological if you do it yourself with your own mind. Then you may become a mental case, but that Krishna doesn't want that. Yeah, but even if that happens, if you're sincere, Krishna will also make you understand that. And but you have to get it from Krishna, you know, that's what Prabhupada is giving. Prabhupada is giving Krishna and pure devotional service, and with that we have to do it, somehow or other. Yeah, that's just words. That's it. Can we conclude? Prabhu? Yes, very beautiful section. From that section, you mean from? Yes. Mm. Mm. in contaminating it. Well, you see, you just have to make a decision for yourself, because this knowledge and our shastras, they give unlimited ways to reason and rationalize in our favor. But the guru is not treating us like that. So if we have a little bit honesty ourselves, we will, like I said before, we will put the highest standards for ourselves and the lowest for others. So I would just turn it around and say that if the devotees were more surrendered, then maybe the guests, they would be positive. The devotees could change the consciousness of the guest. So whether what is true or not true, it's not really important, you know, because mind will simply think about that and in the worst case always find some reason why maybe it's the guest's mistake. Even if that is the case, so you still have to surrender and share that consciousness, and Krishna wants that. So if you're doing that properly, you'll have a beautiful program. But you have to preach to yourself like that. If everybody preaches to himself like that, it's a better situation. That's a spiritual aspect, and then just, you know, managerially, if really mistakes happen, if the guests are not behaving, that has to be dealt with, but always from the proper mood and consciousness. You know, it's a mercy program. You know, so you should be very merciful. How merciful Prabhupada wasn't to his disciples in the beginning. So we should imbibe a little bit of that maybe, and just push ourselves to. Because it's true, if you're really in pure consciousness, it will not go unaffected. You will affect people with that. Even if they're completely, in this example also, this person was trying to kill Sanatana Goswami because he had some gold coins. He talks with Sanatana Goswami, he gets purified, then he's saying, I don't need him anymore. You know? So that should be the challenge as devotees. Okay, we have 2 hours of a program here, see how much we can accomplish. But that's all a result of practice, internal practice, otherwise, you know, we should not even talk about it. I don't know, is that an answer or... All right, let's conclude here. It's time for breakfast. Hare Krishna. Kantaraj Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki. Esi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. Shri Radha Gopinath ki. Jagannath Baladeva Subhadra Maharani ki. Gaur Nitai ki. All glories to the assembled devotees.